Hello and welcome to the Brand Scheme of Things. My name is Furrow Hughes and I'm joined here today with John Beattie.
Hey everybody.
Today we were joined with Liam O'Neill. What do you think of Liam?
Very interesting character. He seems to just be at loads of stuff. He's got the martial arts, he is his magic tricks, magician, fantastic magician. He hypnotized Fergal.
Yeah, he freaked me out a bit there. That was not good.
And we thought it was half an hour, but it was an hour and a half.
He's a really good talker, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a very good talker. I actually don't even remember what I talked about.
Yeah, it was one of those podcasts where you like, it was an hour and a half, and okay, what did we talk about there? He was a very good talker,
and seems to have really good insight into the business world too, where he has so many things he's juggling, but he's such good control of them.
Yeah, I think because of like one thing he touched on was about how he like keeps on getting mentors.
Yes,
and he mentioned that he has about 17 mentors, which is something that everyone should probably do. Well, also he has a book out that we should mention. It's called Limitation is a Mirage. He gave us a free copy very kindly but didn't sign it.
Yeah,
so
Liam,
you're going to have to come back.
We're a bit disappointed. But yeah, very interesting podcast. It's crazy having only one person in this time, and he completely just ran the show. But it was very, very interesting, and hopefully you just listen, and you'll see why.
Yeah, please enjoy, guys.
Thanks.
Warm-blooded, cold-blooded, what weather conditions do you like?
Oh, I do a lot of, body control work, so mm-hmm. I can handle heat and cold. And
what was that guy? He was in the Joe Rogan, he was in loads of different Wim Hof.
I studied his program for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, I think everyone should do it, but like I bought the program and did the 10 weeks of it.
Did you?
Stuff, but
that's it's a breathing technique, isn't
you
it?
You want coffee?
No, I'm 100% of water.
Sure,
there.
Sure,
there. You can buy his program, but I wouldn't put this out if you're recording this. But if you watch his three mini-series videos and the Joe Rogan, you've ever...
Yeah, no, he does. He does go through a lot. Like,
give it some great content, Joe Rogan.
Aye, Joe's deadly. Aye,
but good stuff.
I would advise everyone to do it, especially for cold. Whenever you do the cold therapy, just for recovery and stuff like that.
You seem to do a lot of interesting stuff. You know, like all the stuff you're doing. You must be really enjoying it.
I started about 20 years ago doing martial arts.
Is that where the whole thing started? Yeah.
That's where everything. I left school with no qualifications, anything like that. And my mate was a stoner who wanted to go to media. I had nothing else to do, so I just went with him. Then got kicked out of that and worked in a wee shop and found a magazine. The magazine came in, Kung Fu Magazine, read it, thought, that's the type of stuff I had a clue. I've never watched a Kung Fu movie in my life. One of my mates was into Kung Fu, I didn't know, I was talking about this magazine and they gave me a DVD, Drunken Master.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Deadly.
That's classic.
Deadly show. I still go back to it, I couldn't even tell you the amount of times I watched it. But I used to sit and watch it and pause it and draw. I'm a terrible drawer, but I would draw out the move. And then I'd get like a wee sequence together that he would do, but because it was a video, they would edit, like they would show his top and then his bottom, but very rarely both. Mm. So then I would like, imagine what it was like. What is his legs doing up his arms?
That reminds me of Steven Seagal. They say now you never see his lower half of his body in the film. It just cuts to him, you know, like doing a judo chop, and then the next scene is like these young legs just doing a backflip or something.
I became really good at picking out stunt doubles.
Yes,
I'd be able to go double. That's a double because that drawing. Even when I went to Kung Fu, they would show me a form and they'd be like, this is the routine you're going to learn. It takes everyone 6 months to learn. And I'd be like, show me it again there. They'd show me it again. And I'd be like, all right, I could do that. And then I would be able to just do it.
I
used to annoy the ones in the class because I could pick it up. But I think that's because I understood why you were doing it. A lot of people would do martial arts and look lovely.
Yeah.
I look lovely. Mm-hmm. You're like, go and fight that guy. And then try to...
just wave at them.
what sort of martial arts was it?
Tiger and Crane Kung Fu, Shaolin Tiger and Crane Kung Fu.
Where did you learn that?
Over in London. So in the back of the magazine there was a phone call for a Shaolin club, uh-huh. And they sold it really well. I was like, learn Shaolin, be a monk, blah blah blah. And I was like, I phoned them on a Wednesday, went over and stayed for a weekend on Friday. Never left my house in my life, never went on any, I wasn't allowed any school trips or anything, so I'd never been away from home with my family. Land over to these little bunch of English fellas in the middle of a, I hadn't a clue what I was doing. They asked me what had I been studying, and I was like, Drunken Master.
Duh. Yeah.
I know why he does everything he does. And then just ended up doing that, travel back and forth, and then ended up getting hired to be the application instructor. I think it was because of the day, my first day, I fought a world champion kickboxer, and he spinning heel kicked me in the head.
Whoa.
Straight away, straight off the bat, boom, it was sort of a welcome to our club thing.
Yeah.
And my response was, fuck, that was awesome. I should have blocked it, but that was, do that, how do you do that? And I was supposed to, like the instructor said to me, like, maybe you should sit down and kick in the head. And I was like, in my head, my brother always hit me harder than anyone I've ever had.
Yeah.
So I was like, should my brother hit me harder?
That's the one, I was going to say it's the one advantage to having a brother, but there's obviously many advantages. But yeah, you learn how to defend yourself very quickly.
Or just take a punch.
No,
I always tell the story, I actually said at my brother's wedding a few months ago about how we used to treat each other when we were younger, how he used to look after me. It used to be whenever I had a wobbly tooth, he'd go, I was so young, like I was gullible, did it every time. He goes, John, let me see that wobbly tooth. And I go, like, I got there, he just go, just knock it out. And then take a couple with him as well, every single time.
Fuck. Hoping they would get to keep them for the tooth guy.
That's mine now.
I think people miss that, like, roughhousing, we call it now, because we're all PC, but.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of need that.
You need a medal for finishing your soup, like, in your house. Eighth place medal.
In America now, they have football with no balls.
What do they do?
Just run around. You're not allowed to touch each other. Your mind's in the ball. You can't throw it to each other. Everyone wins.
That's mental.
Them kids are fucked when they get
older.
They
are like, fucked.
They are. Like,
as if America's not really fucked as it is, though, with the stuff that's going on.
Whatever happened to, like, competition? Like, the who decided the competition was wrong? That's what I had looked at.
Losers.
All the losers.
But it is people.
Like, people aren't going to enjoy that answer, but like you're kind of right.
I actually listened to the Gary V podcast again. You ever heard of Gary V? He was on the Joe Rogan one, and Gary V always has his agenda. He always gets in his bites, his wee sound bites all the time, which is very smart.
Yeah.
But he told a story about how he never lets his daughter beat him at basketball. Like, never. You know, like, he doesn't do the daddy thing where, oh, you got past
heard
me.
That a couple of times with people.
He's like, you're not getting past me. You're not dunking on me. You're not scoring, like, to his daughter. Joe's been really bad. Because he's like, well, my daughter, we do martial arts, and I would never think about striking her and stuff. And then Gary's like, no, I've never hit my child. But I'm just saying I would never let her beat me.
Yeah.
It was a good wee conversation, though, but it did show, there was them two actually at each other, and then the whole, that they're still, like, Gary is instilling that in his children. And then America's just completely fact.
Yeah. I think there's a healthy balance.
There's a healthy balance.
Of what,
I think Joe's confusing them. Like, martial arts is different. You have to, as a martial artist, let your students don't get the better of you, so they know what it's like to change position and transition.
Got to give and take, sort of thing.
Whereas in basketball, I would be the same. I wouldn't let you win. But in martial arts as well, if you were coming and I was teaching you, you would get the better of me a lot, and I would tap out to you and stuff.
Mm.
But if you started to get cocky or be a dick about it, I would just annihilate you for 10 minutes and show you that, you know, you need to have that humbleness.
Would martial arts not be that sort of way with the students, where the students that you do have that sort of relaxed approach to it, where they wouldn't get hot-headed? Or
not at the start.
It does.
No,
at
the start, I would have always said, especially when I was living in London, like, martial arts invites troubled people because they don't know what to do. There's no, like, especially lack of control. They want, that's why the discipline in martial arts is really good. Like, you always see as a martial artist, you always see a picture on Facebook and stuff. It's like a wee girl dressed as a footballer, and she's giving the fingers, and she looks real angry, and she's roaring and shouting at some other girl who's dressed as a different football team.
Yeah.
And then you have the wee martial art guys dressed in their gis, bowing to each other and being just polite. So it instills all that. That's why I think I would never teach martial arts to children one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
I always refused to do that because they would learn how to fight, but they wouldn't learn how to interact with people. They wouldn't learn all of the stuff that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that kids should lose to get used to it, because like them kids that play that football with no ball, they're going to land a job, like come on a job, and you'll go, what are you qualified in? Like, what? Just give me the job.
Yeah,
like, imaginary football.
Get used to it.
It probably has a real name.
Well, you do a lot, learn a lot more from your from losing than you do from from victory.
Yeah,
so
you need a sport.
Yeah, it needs to happen. It needs to happen. So what happened? What happened next then? So you went, you were over in London, you were...
I randomly moved in with a magician called Steve Shackleton. And he did a trick, he put a tempi inside a can of Coke. That just blew my mind. And I was like, teach me your ways, and he wouldn't teach me. And I got at him for about 3 weeks.
Is that magician's law or something, or magician's...
It's wild annoying, because it is a bit, because people, as a magician, people will you'll show someone a trick and they'll go, oh, go on, teach me that. Sometimes, like, whenever people are listening to this now, they'll think about us, like, in a massive, elaborate thing and how comfortable everything is, and we've got, like, Doritos and everything.
But
and,
we,
like,
do,
you know,
we do.
So whenever you see the trick, they're like, oh, that was amazing. Teach it. Some of the stuff you teach people won't... Like, it's shit once you know how it's done.
Yeah.
You don't understand all the mechanics and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up just... killing their magical buzz.
Just
about
say
that.
You kind of it's the magic you lose.
You lose the magic
you lose
once
the
you know.
Magic,
yeah.
Yeah.
So you, whenever I think is what makes you a good magician is that you start to get magic from somewhere else. So my magic comes from people. As cheesy as it sounds, the facial reactions and the way people are whenever you do something. Same as whenever you edit a video and you hand it to the person.
Yeah.
And you're like, I put
that's,
a lot of effort.
That's
in.
Where the buzz comes.
That's
from.
One of the big. That's one of the big things. Yeah, it's the how they emotionally attach to the stuff as well.
Yeah.
We actually got a voucher from, I think it's with Queen's University. We haven't cashed it into them yet, but it's research where our videos we're gonna. Do a big study on it, right? And they'll get students to do it, and they get the money for it. But they are going to give us feedback.
Brilliant.
On different videos. It might even be ours, but it's going to be a research on how they react to different types of videos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be it's going to be I don't know, it's like heart monitors, facial recognition. It's going to be are they sweating or how are they feeling, their heartbeat and stuff like that there. And I think that's I know it's been done somewhere. I don't think it's been done much in Northern Ireland, but I think it's something where whenever we do make a video, we always try to have a story behind it and actually make people feel something from it.
Yeah.
It's the same as branding. It's the same as all the marketing and stuff. Like you want people to be attached to it.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people forget that the point of what you're doing is to invoke a reaction.
Yeah.
And most people try to get a reaction, but they don't think the emotional side of the reaction. They just think this looks cool to us.
Yeah.
Like, and then you sit and you show one other person and they're looking at it going, what's the point in this?
Yeah.
Which is your favourite type of reaction to get from a trick? Is it people kind of trying to figure out how you did it, or is it people just completely amazed? Or
I love stunned silence.
That's
it's why I don't do a why not a videoing. It sounds like a cop out, but I don't do a lot of videoing of my magic, because I get into the motivational side of stuff and corporate speaking, and I use my magic in that. So my magic has a point, and I want you to think and resonate with you, like what you're talking about. So if I was doing stuff for you, I would scan the room and think, well, because I've seen what you do anyway, I would know that you make videos, so you're creative people. So the magic would be very creative. So then you would start to think creatively, whereas if I work with a group of accountants, it's very mathematical.
Mm-hmm.
I change the way I perform all the time to fit the people.
Mm-hmm.
But I love when they're sitting in silence thinking, because my whole, my book's called Limitation is a Mirage. I wrote a book by it. It's called Limitation is a Mirage.
I know.
And because that's what I believe. So if I go to you and I say, you tell me what you want to be, and I say, well, you could do that if you just took these steps, and they think, oh, this is impossible. I can do something magical that's completely impossible. And then I go, well, if that is impossible and it happened, why is what you want to be, what you think is impossible? Why are you not capable of doing that? So I love that silence where they're staring at me and they're not trying to work it out. When people are trying to work it out, they're not fully engaging in the experience.
Yeah.
And if they're not fully engaging, then that's my fault there. Same as if you make a video and you watch me watch it and I'm on it and I'm on Facebook and I'm going, oh, that was really cool.
Yeah.
You want me to put everything down and watch that.
Yeah.
Or even just go, that was deadly, I need to pay more attention and rewind it. Rewind? Do we even rewind anymore? Go back? Remember rewinding things?
in the video store.
Yeah.
Then leave it back.
In the wee thing.
Aye.
So I think that the whenever they're silent, they're processing that, and it's changing their thinking. They thought a linear way, life works like this, and then I throw something mental, and they go, geez, maybe life doesn't always work like that. Maybe I could go over here with... Even when I tell my story about, like, the martial art I do, I'm the top ranked in the two arts I do in this country, North and South, just from a wee finding a magazine one day in a shop in Oma, where nobody was doing Kung Fu. There was karate and judo, but there was no Kung Fu. And when I said, for 8 years I studied, traveling back and forth, and people were like, get a real job, like, sort of like, sort of like, everyone that's ever told me to sort my life out and do something useful has come to me for one session to sort her life out.
That must feel good.
The best bit was handing my book to my school teacher. I was only allowed in one classroom in the building, so whenever I got to go up and I was like, wrote a book.
Were you a bad student then, I take it?
I was the best student, I think. When you look back, because they put me, I either sat in the back of one classroom or I sat on a radiator outside that classroom, so I didn't interrupt anyone or do anything. Like, I wasn't in any way disruptive.
Yeah.
But I was, to end up in that situation, I just didn't like school. I don't learn like everyone else learns. I never read or write. I was put in special, like, there's a thing called Fuzzbuzz. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's like a sweet book called Fuzzbuzz, and when you're like P5 and you're not good at reading and writing, they'll put you on it. Mm-hmm. Like it was the original special need kid. Mm-hmm. I was on that in third year because I'd convinced them I couldn't read or write, and I'd been blagging my way through, so they would get me a wee special teacher and all.
Right.
And then they were going to send me to the special school, so I had to like inform them that this
you
was...
You had to wise up?
Well, I just had to inform them that I could read and what I was doing, like I was laying. So I ended up in one... I'd escalate very fast. Like, my mum used to just be up and down to the school all the time. They never suspended me, which was my goal, but they never did it. I thought, if they suspended me, I'll just get home and never
and then
have
you
to
can
come back.
Do what you want. Did you have it in your head whenever you were there that, you know, this isn't for me, so I'm going to try and do something else? Were you logical thinking back then?
No,
or was it just,
I was
like,
just like, I do not do school.
Screw this.
School
I'm
is
done.
Not me. I was a wee angry child.
Uh-huh.
So one of my triggers for some reason was being accused in the wrong. You could say
that's
anything,
a lot of kid triggers. Like, it's
And what really annoyed me, if saying like, if I broke a window and I came home and my mum was like, Liam, did you break that window? I would go, yeah. I used to like be amazed at how my mum would just know everything. And now when I get older, I assume she just heard something bad had happened and went, Liam, did you do the bad thing? And I was like, yep. So when they accused me of the wrong, they'd be like, Liam, did you break into that car? No, I didn't. Oh, we think you did, and we've witnessed. And I'm like, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. I would admit everything. So when I got accused of the wrong, it just annoyed me. And a teacher did it one day, and he was so adamant that he caught me. He caught me drinking in the town on a Friday night. I'd never drank in my life. I've never drank. And he caught me on a Friday night, and he was losing the plot.
Really be his concern.
Well, that's what I thought. Yeah, but he, like,
drinking's wrong, kids.
But he was a bollocks, like, and he was selling it like he really cared. But he was trying to get me in baller, and he was like I go into the town looking, this sounds terrible, I go into the town looking for kids to see what they're up to. And I was like, do you? So getting accused of the wrong, so then once that happened in like third year, then I just completely gave in, like, and I was a wee terror. Until they didn't allow me in classrooms, I was just a nightmare.
School system has failed a lot of people, like,
that's terrible.
It's crazy. And you were mentioning there you're like a wild child and stuff. There's this thing that we're trying to work towards. There's a group in Belfast that I was chatting to, and the main goal of it is be more realistic in schools with your subjects and the actual students. So, like, say you did science, maths, English, Spanish, and you had to do Spanish, you had to do this, you had to do that. Just go, here, what do you want to do? You know, you're forcing subjects, you're forcing careers on people. It's absolutely crazy. And if they actually just stopped and go, here, listen, what do you enjoy? Even if you waste a year, two years, 3 years, at least you're not wasting 3 years whenever you're an adult finding out the stuff you don't like. You know, it's crazy.
At third year, they're telling you third year, pick your subjects.
Yeah, and that'll define you up until upper sixth.
Well, that'll define you forever. That'll lead you to be in this, and then you just be that forever. Like, school was designed for factory working.
That's a fact, isn't it?
Line you up, sit in, get used to the structure.
Yeah.
Like, we don't do that at all anymore. Like,
No. There's no need for factory workers anymore.
Everything can be learned on YouTube.
Robots.
Aye.
You just need to be told where to go.
My page. That's entire work YouTube, to be fair.
That was actually like university. I remember just I learned everything on YouTube, and they were like, "Oh, we don't spit in Fiji in university." And we're like, "Yeah, but we just paid nearly $20,000 for you to tell us to go on and find that video on YouTube. Could you not just give us the list to go on and find this stuff?" It's absolutely crazy.
Think about what you learned about yourself looking on YouTube.
Yeah. I learned how to use the search really well, and fantastic 4 years of YouTube. Absolutely. So what else was I going to say? I was seeing your TED talk in Oma a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Really, how did you get into that? Like, TED talks very prestigious, and we watch loads of them. Like, I love them. Class. Some of them you're like, this is crazy. Some of them, this is very useful, and some of them are like, wow, 20 minutes of this girl telling you something about, was it her family? Do you remember the one of the girl, she was in like the cult, she was in the cult religion over in America.
So that actress?
No, mm-hmm. She,
you're talking about Scientology, or, you know?
No,
seems like I was thinking that too. Yeah.
She was in this close family-knit religion. Like out in the out
well, then once it all got killed, the guy gassed everyone, and only like a couple survived.
No, it wasn't them. They were against gays. They were against.
Was that the one Lou Theroux followed for a while?
Yes, Lou Theroux followed them. Yeah. It's like Church of the White Abbey, or I'll find it and link it later. But it was absolutely ridiculous. But it was probably the TED talk that I gravitated towards most. She was in like this cult there for all her life, and about 20, she was like, she started talking to someone on Twitter.
Yeah.
And the Twitter man,
right.
She was chatting to people on the street, and they were very aggressive towards her, which rightly so. They were again. She was against everybody, practically, the religion and the family was. She chatted the boy on Twitter, and he didn't argue with her. He tried to talk to her like a normal person. They ended up getting married, but and then she just completely just started questioning the cult and all. It was very interesting. That was the TED talk wise. That was the most interesting one I ever watched. It was quite good. Where
obviously, except the one that I
she did
first.
No, that my favorite. I was going to say. It was,
and then
definitely.
Liam's are recently just cropped up in my YouTube learning from university. Just popped up and changed my life. So yeah, how did you get roped into that?
I get it. Same way I get into everything. I just contact people. So I seen they were doing it. Contacted the guy that was organizing it. I just. Same as I did with you, just say, here, look, I'm awesome, you should probably come and talk to me. And
great attitude.
And then I got there. Like, I got there, my TED talk, what I really like about my video for my talk was everyone else, if you listen to all the other guys that spoke, it's recorded, it's all recorded professionally, and the audio was mic'd up and directly in. But when you listen to them, there's no ambience, there's no audience. Mm-hmm. So they could have just been videoed anywhere.
Yeah.
Whereas when I went to go on stage, this was where the idea for my book came. My whole talk was about limitation being a mirage, and there should have been a massive limitation as a mirage poster behind me, like projected on the wall, but there wasn't, because they had lost it somehow. And then I had to change the whole start of my opening bit, because I it's the first thing I ever memorized. Normally I would have went on and had a plan, like a bullet point plan, and I would just do it, but I memorized this script.
How many minutes was that again?
I think it was 12.
12?
12 minutes.
Because they're very precise with that, aren't they?
It's mostly isn't the talkers usually have like a wee script, a wee tiny script to start, just to plug what they need to in terms of, like, get the feeling for who you are, and then after that it's just, you know.
No.
Is it?
No, especially when you go to the big TED talk, they have to see every word you're going to say, in case it's against their, if you watch.
Against the TED.
There's one of the guys that was involved in TED that is on Joe Rogan, I forget what he's called, but I'll try to find it and send you the link to it.
Dude.
And he just outs TED for being horrible, like what they do, but that you have to be scripted, it has to be perfectly, everything had to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The TED I did, it wasn't like that, because it was an affiliate.
Uh-huh.
So I had memorized everything, went to walk on stage. It happened a couple of times. A few people that I'll never do this, but a few people, like, they were introduced and they clapped, and they got on stage and there was a technical issue, and they stood there, and every so often they'd say something to the crowd like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. I went to walk on, noticed the poster, and walked back, and the guy was like, get on. I was like, I'm not going on, that's wrong, I'm not going on. They can clap, like, they can just start clapping. And we had the conversation. It didn't work, because it would have killed the whole ambience of what I was doing. And then I said, and also the mic's not in the stand. I noticed when I walked out the mic wasn't in the stand. So I said, where's the mic? And they go, oh, if it's not in the stand, it'll be at the table at the corner. So I says, no bother. So I was changing what I was going to say at the opening, and I walked on, and again, I do a lot of vocal warm-ups and practice, so I've vocally warmed up and practiced for speaking into a mic, so I'm not roaring down a mic, which again, you would see a lot of people do, and noticed there was no mic. The girl who was on before me had taken the mic
off the
with
side.
With her for some reason. I actually took it off, like into the back.
So you would have been walking and standing to nothing.
So I walk and I spot there's no mic and everything, and I'm reshuffling all of this in my head, and then I just, thankfully my training just kicked in and everything went. Like, I'm a very calm person in general, so I was able to keep pretty chilled out doing it. But even before that, like, everyone else talked about suicide and mental health, which is brilliant, and I think it all should be talked about, but they talked about it in a real deep way. And then I was saying to the organizer, I was like, I'm going to go out here and get kicked in the balls. Like, this is
my next point.
And do a magic trick.
I couldn't believe it. I says, me and Fergal, once you contact us, like, we'll obviously do go and see who you are and just have a wee look at what you do, and Watson over there. And I know he turned around and goes, Fergal, did you just fucking see that? You just smashed the chapstick off his neck.
Yeah, that was the first thing, and then there was two reactions from, because we kept, he had the headphones on, I had the headphones on, and I was like, whoa!
He was about 5 minutes ahead of me, like, and then I go, do you see him get kicked the balls? He goes, yeah, I seen that.
It was like, very nice of you to give your brother that opportunity to do that.
We do it right and often.
Just to hurt, but now it's...
That's fine, that's why I speak a wee bit squeakier than
So, is that something you do... That's a weird question. Something you do regularly, getting kicked in the balls? Is that a...
It's especially when I'm talking about pain. I do a lot of pain control with people. So, like, when I got my tattoos, I sat for 5.5 hours. And even my tattooist was like, you haven't even flinched. What is going on here? And I'm like, I just can switch it off. So, like,
I find it so interesting, like, just with the mind to do that. It's crazy.
I can demonstrate some stuff with these before I leave.
As long as you don't kick me in the balls.
But that'll be the thing. I kick you in the bag and you'll be grand with it. It's weird. It's getting over it. And the way, the most basic way of looking at it is, have you ever seen a child cut themselves and they run about and then you go, geez, what happened to your knee? And they look at their knee and they freak out and cry, and it's the sorest thing ever happened to you.
Yes.
And you're like, if I didn't bring their attention to that, I wonder, would they have noticed? Mm-hmm. So if I'm... The balls one is to explain about pain, control, relaxation, posture, everything. The chapstick in the throat is just wins my audience, especially like that TED talk. I was the second last talk. Everyone was very deep. So I walk on stage and I'm like, hello, I'm Liam, and usual in my head I'm going, they look fucking knackered, good job, I'm going to do something mental. And then I describe what I'm about to do and people start to perk up a wee bit. And then I do it. And then they run. They, like, whatever I say now.
Well, it got my attention. Definitely.
Oh, certainly.
Like, when I was taught that, it was one of the iron shirt trainers. Like, we did specialist. You train for ages, and then you get, like, invited into the club, and you have to give the master a cup of tea. He was mad. Like, and, like, if he takes the tea off you, then he's agreed to teach you the iron shirt. If he doesn't take the tea off you, you're not being taught, so you're not ready.
Bad
at all.
Cup of tea, just?
It's... mental, because you're walking up, everyone, like, especially being Irish, everyone you've ever said you want tea takes it.
Oh yeah.
You're walking up to this wee Singaporean master and he's smoking a wee pipe, and you're like, if he doesn't take this, I'm gonna drop kick him. So I learned all the techniques and trained and practiced them all, and then when it came to learning the chapstick, I thought there's gonna be a special technique, we're gonna do this, that, and the other, and my instructor was like, do it. What? Put that there and hit it till it smashes. Took me 3 attempts to do it. It was brutal.
Ooh.
My voice was wrecked for about a week after. But everyone that was with me at the time, like, hit it and took a break, and they were like really anxious about it. But I just trusted in my masters. That was the way I looked at it. I was like, I'm here. I've trusted them to teach me. I was weird at school. Wouldn't listen to an authority figure if you paid me, which my dad tried to do. Kung Fu, what do you want me to do? Punch a brick? Have you ever punched a brick before? No, I'll punch it. Was that sore?
What do you think that made you, like, switch your brain from, like, I'm not listening to anyone as a child, I'm not authority, I hate it, and then kind of this, is it because of the, you were so impressed by these people, do you think it takes someone with
no, you know,
an,
it was
ability,
my,
or
my teacher said to me when I was leaving, we were all doing it's funny, I got an award at school, gold award for attendance. Teacher was ripping, and the reason I got that was because my mum's only rule was go to school. She should have clarified, go and learn, it's 100%. But it was just go into the building. So I was in the building, so they had to sign me in, and I never missed a day because I'm never sick.
Mm-hmm.
So they're calling out all these names, and there's a stall, and the teacher looks at the other teacher, and they have a wee like discussion, and then my mum's like, wonder what's going on. I was like, they're calling me. No, they're not. I was like, they are. So then they had to call me, and he said to me after, he was our careers teacher,
mm-hmm.
and he said to me, telling everybody, I can't wait till you do whatever you're going to do, and you're going to be brilliant. And then it got to me, and he was like, you'll be in the jail or army before you're 18. And I knew I couldn't do the army because my dad wouldn't allow it. So I was like, jail, that's a bit harsh. And then I just thought, I'm going to prove him wrong somehow, someday. And my goal was just to not go to jail. And then the martial arts came in, and when I grew up, we used to fight. Like, the bigger boys would just be like, right, Liam, you have to go and fight Sean. And you just land over, and you'd apologize, and you'd be like, Sean, sorry, and then you get in a fight. So he wouldn't have known he was getting in a fight, what happened. So whenever I got into the martial arts stuff, I already liked and enjoyed fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever it became structured fighting, I loved it. And I just want, like, I would have, when we sparred, I would have sparred the whole room. I would have sparred everyone that existed. Whenever I first went to teach one of the older teenage classes, they were like the 17 to 19. One of them refused to do anything, and then the rest of the class sat down because I was only technically ranked grade 1 when I was teaching. I was teaching grade 12 because I had only learnt one nice wee relaxing form, but I could put that one form into application, so whenever I sparred or fought, I would win,
mm-hmm.
and I would be able to do stuff, and I had real world experience. And he refused to do anything, and then argued with me that I had no right to try to teach him because he was a grade 11 or whatever he was, and I was only a 1. So I offered him on in the class. Then I offered the whole class on because nobody get involved, so I was for fighting everybody. And I think it was just that, like,
she always had that attitude of
just
like,
I
could take anyone.
Fair with us fight. This sounds like
no, they wouldn't fight me. And I said that was my point. I was like, you come and prove to me why I shouldn't teach you.
Yeah.
And then I was like, in actual fact, the whole class has backed you, so all of he's come on, that's fine. I will fight everybody at once. We'll see how we fare out, and then we can judge who should be the instructor here. And that won them over, because they, no one would fight me, and I was like, that's why I'm here, and you're not. You just don't trust in what you do. I am fully, fully trusting in what I do, and I will fight this whole class just to prove my point. Like,
I would love to have seen that. And being the fly on the wall watching that also. That would be very good.
But it's always been my attitude. Like, that's how I ended up like a 3-time bronze medalist in Irish pole dancing championships.
Pole dancing?
Nice.
It's
different.
How'd you get into that?
I did a talk on Tai Chi with a group of young mums. I was talking about how Tai Chi will benefit anything, and I fully believe that. You learn Tai Chi, it will improve every single aspect of your life.
Mm-hmm.
The focus, the breathing, the relaxation. You can't give me a time when focus, breathing, and relaxation is not going to be useful,
mm-hmm.
in your life. And the girl was like, well, I'm a pole dancer, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, perfect. You could breathe through the moves. You could hold, blah, blah. And she then dared me to come and try pole dancing. Like,
pole dancing's hard, apparently.
Pole dancing was hard. I got there, and pole dancing was hard, but I train a lot, so I got
your
through it.
Your fitness level's pretty high.
And she was like, you should do this. She was like, you could get ready and compete next year. And I was like, when's next year? How far away is that? And she's like, oh, well, the competition's on Sunday. So it'd be like a year on Sunday. And I was like, fuck, why don't we just compete on Sunday? So I landed on Sunday. We went to the competition. And I did 1 hour of pole dance and went to Sunday to compete. Never heard my song before, ever. And it had been edited, so it didn't even fit right. So the song starts playing. I'm walking onto the stage, looking like everyone else was like painted in glitter and wearing hot pants, and like these are the guys, like not even the women, it was madness. And you're backstage with a load of flexible, attractive women who think you're gay,
mm-hmm.
like, because this was at the start when there wasn't many straight guys doing it, so they're just chatting to you and like changing and everything, and I'm going to them, look, this is all well and good, before you keep changing, I'm straight. And they're like, oh, you seem nice, like, go on. So it was a really weird environment. Everyone's tanned, makeuped. The guys had like glitter wings painted on them, and wee hot pants and all sorts of stuff. I looked like I was going to the beach. I was wearing a black vest and a pair of board shorts. On the way to I was walking onto the stage, and my mate was there, and he was like, "Take your vest off at least. Look stupid." And I was like, "How am I the one looking stupid?" So I take my vest off, get on the stage, do a Tai Chi pole dancing routine, because you had to go from two poles, and they did all this sexy stuff, and I was like, "How do I get from one pole to the other without just walking? I'll do some Tai Chi." So I did Tai Chi flowing things, and went to do a move, and the song ended, so I just landed and bowed, and then walked off stage. Came third. The judge said to me, "If you had done like two or three extra moves, we would have put you first because your flow and energy and the way you entertained the crowd was amazing. You just didn't have enough moves." And I was like, "I only know the three moves that I did." She's like, "How long have you been doing pole dancing?" I was like, "What time is it?" I go, "About 6 hours." She goes, "God, 6 months, that's amazing for that." And I was like, "No,
6 hours."
6 hours. And then it came out, and there was loads of really hot women everywhere, and I was loving life, like, because they were all chatting to me. And I was like, "This is deadly, I'm like a stripper." And then it started to catch on. I was like, "They're talking to me about weird, though. Like, they've no intention of, like, they're not turned on by what I've done, they're just impressed a wee bit." And I got chatting to my mate, and I was chatting to him, and he was laughing. He's like, "Oh, the women are loving you, it's real good, isn't it?" And he's been real smug too, and I was like, "What are you being so smug about?" Mm-hmm. And another girl came over and asked, could she introduce me to her mate? And I'm like, "Yeah,
it's a guy."
Neil had been telling everyone I was gay. And I was loving life the whole time.
Brilliant. You were saying for a go there you wanted to chat about the meditation and stuff side of it. I'm interested in that too, the relaxation, the meditation.
Well, I haven't done much meditation, it's just the app.
And the mindfulness one?
The mindfulness
app. Headspace one as well.
Headspace one. So it's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then I find it difficult, like, but I did find it was helping me. So how did you get into that? I suppose it's through the Tai.
Through the martial arts. We were just told you have to do Tai Chi, you have to do martial arts. I did not give a shit about the Tai Chi, the soft side of it, the Qigong, the meditation. I just wanted to punch stuff and fight people. So I became the head application instructor, I became the demonstration team, so we were breaking stuff off each other and getting kicked around the place, and all that was my job.
Sounds like WWF or something.
Pretty much, like, we loved, remember, WWF? Me and Sean used to battle each other. Oh, yeah. You get a new carpet and you think, well, that's basically a pad.
It
is. My brother was a lot bigger than me when I was younger, like, I'm massive now, your viewers can't see me, but I'm massive now. And, so he used to be able to pick me up and kick me around the place. Karate Kid, we talked about Cobra Kai earlier. Yeah. We watched Karate Kid and he was like, "You think that kick hurts?" I was like, "I don't know, try it." Hey, Karate Kid kicked me in the chin, threw me over the sofa in the toy box. He was like, "I'm really sorry." And I was like, "It hurts."
I can confirm.
Well, I was like, I felt how he sounds either, but he's not here, so it's fine. But then eventually, like, I lived with the Tai Chi instructor, Sheila, and she just made me do Tai Chi. And I felt she was old, and it was her house, so I better.
Old and wise?
She's mental too, but, like, the loveliest, loveliest woman ever. Even she used to hit me with sticks and all, which is still lovely. And she got me into it that way, and then my other instructor used to take me back and forward again, and we would do bits and pieces, but they decided they were moving away, and I had to learn the Tai Chi. So Tai Chi is supposed to take 10 years to master, 3 to learn the form, 3 to learn the form with fluidity, 3 more to learn it with breathing properly, and then 1 to actually combine it all.
Mm.
6 days I had to learn this Tai Chi form, because they were all going on holidays and I was having to cover all the classes, and I had to look like I wasn't just roped into it. Mm-hmm. So I just developed that and noticed that it was beneficial, it was helping my other training. I was more relaxed, and I remember Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, whenever the boy goes to punch him, and it's the first time he's ever used a spider speed and all, and he's like looking at the arm. That's how I felt. Tai Chi added that. People would be throwing punches and you'd just be moving, going, "Hey, this is quite easy."
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed my temper had completely changed. And the real penny drop moment was, I was working in a bar. You could have come into the bar or met me anywhere and give me any abuse you wanted, ever.
Just in London?
No, this was when I'd moved back home, whenever I'd been doing it a wee while. Still not fully in it, but still at it. And if you had said anything to me, I wouldn't have cared. took a lot to write me personally, but if you said, if you just have to say your mum, like in Oma, it used to be your ma was abuse.
Oh yeah.
Your man had booted you in the head. I don't know what she could have said is looking you.
Mm-hmm.
Your man's looking for you for your. So I was behind the bar, and it was a bar. I had jumped the bar on different occasions, but we had moved the pipes now, the pumps, sorry, for the beers. And the guy said, "Your man's a fat bitch." I lost it, and I was getting around him. By the time I got around him, he said, "Your man's a fucking skinny bastard." I don't know how much cursing you allowed, but
yeah, I walk away.
So I just, that was just like a wee penny drop moment. I just was like, "You're just saying." I tell this story all the time. I was like, "You're just saying words."
Mm.
You just called her fat and skinny, and then he said to me, "You and your mom's a fat bitch." And I said, "You know, to be fair, she probably could lose a bit of weight." And he went, "Aye, she's just fucking skinny bitch." And I was like, "You know what, aye, if she fixed her diet up and put on a wee bit of weight, she'd probably look a lot healthier." In my head, he may as well have said, "You're wearing a hat and you have shoes."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How dare you say that?
But that's what I was like, he was just saying stuff. And then I was like, I actually posted this yesterday on Facebook, it was how I was reacting to what people were saying mm-hmm. to me, and that was just a moment. And then I sat and thought about it, and it was the meditation that did it. So I teach nearly everyone, I do one-to-one clients, corporate training, anything, I teach a form of meditation. So I have MP3s on my website that are free, you can just download, but one's for relaxing to help you sleep, things like that, and then focus and confidence. So I teach the relaxing one. So my main point in meditation is a lot of people try to switch off to meditate, and it's a lot of people's problem is they can't switch off, they keep thinking and having thoughts and whatever. So I would say to you, if you're learning to meditate, deal with a thought. Like, so talk to yourself like you're 8. So a thought comes in, like if I'm sitting meditating and a thought comes in, like, "Liam, what are you going to have for dinner?" I go, "Oh, I don't know, it doesn't matter, I'll sort that out later." And then that thought goes away, whereas most people go, "Get out," and they try to move that thought away from them, they try to do that. So my description of it is always, imagine you're sitting in the middle of the floor in a room. So imagine we're in this room and I'm sitting on the floor and I've closed my eyes and I'm like a monk and I'm humming and meditating whatever way I want to meditate, and my mum comes into the room. So I love my mum, so imagine my mum comes into the room and she goes, "Liam, I want you to go to the shop after this," and I go, "Fuck off, mum, I'm meditating, get the fuck out." That's going to cause an argument. She's not going to leave the room. She's going to argue with me. And then later on, it's going to cause me bother, and it's just going to keep causing hassle. Mm.
Yes.
Whereas mum comes in the room, "Liam, I want you to go to the shop." And I say, "No bother, mum. I'll do that. 5 minutes, I'm done. Thank you, Liam." She'll leave the room. That's dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing. Thought comes in your head. You try to get rid of it. So instead of trying to get rid of it, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So like negativity, whenever I'm teaching meditation, I teach people to self-focus. So like if I asked you now to think of something that makes you feel negative, don't go mental, like it was like someone like getting cut off in traffic, could you think of something? You don't have to tell me what it is, but
yeah,
where do you physically feel that in your body? How does your body physically react to that?
Not sure, like I don't know, facial, I get angry, so
aye,
yeah.
So your face gets a bit red when you thought about it, and that's what happens. Now think of something that you love, don't have to tell us either, but something that you really love, that
mm-hmm.
Like something that you love doing, or a person, or an environment. But really think about that. Think about what you would see if you were there, and what you would hear if you were there. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you feel that in the body?
Like here.
It's chest. So is it warm or fuzzy, or what's it like?
It's warm.
Warm. So imagine that warm feeling. We'll do this really fast. But imagine fill your whole chest.
Mm-hmm.
Travel down your shoulders. Imagine going up and relaxing your teeth, so your jaw
mm-hmm.
separates. So even you can see already, you're relaxing the chair. Imagine going through the head.
It's working.
Down the legs to the tip of the toes. So
mm-hmm.
every muscle, cell, and fiber of you is feeling that love through
mm-hmm.
the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see as you watch him, like his face is relaxing and everything's
mm-hmm.
going with it. When you feel that, I'm assuming that you don't feel a negative anymore.
No.
Yeah. So everyone who's listening can do that. I did that really fast, but you can do it. It can be done fast. We've never met and I've never tried to do this to you before. If we did it slow, it's better. You can go a lot deeper with it.
Yeah.
But the point of it is, most people feel bad and try to work out what to do about how bad they feel.
Yes.
Like today, like I work with a lot of people with anxiety. They're like, "Oh, I'm stressed today. Shit, I'm stressed because of this, and I'm stressed because of that." Or you feel bad because of any reason, whatever you feel bad for. So instead of focusing on how you feel negatively and what to do about that, think about something that makes you feel good. And imagine what that would be like if that was happening. So the scenario you're thinking about, imagine you were immersed in it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're feeling negative, you're immersed in the fact that you have no money or you have no job or your boyfriend's an asshole or your girlfriend's a dick or whatever it is, you're immersed in the negative.
Yeah.
So think about the positive. So you think, so like whatever your scenario was, you're thinking, right, and then I say, feel it somewhere, right, I feel it here. So it's done two things. One, it's taught you what, where you feel negatively and where you feel positively.
Mm.
So then you, now you need to go, so say if you're feeling a bit down, you could do an anchor, which is just tap your chest, because that's where you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So you tap your chest and it sends your brain to, oh, there's something weird in my chest, I feel something in my chest. What do we normally feel in the chest? Love. And then it distracts you from, first it interrupts your pattern, and then it distracts you from what you're thinking. So without getting too deep into meditation or thinking about it, you do that before you meditate. You think about something that you love. Think about why you're meditating. Like, what's the point? People meditate because they want to switch off from what? What do you want to switch off from? Negative. Why not switch on to something awesome? So I might go, like, I'll do it 2 minutes. Like, the relax process that I do it every time I go to the gym. I'll sit in the car, close my eyes, in 2 minutes I'll do that, relax, and I'll build a better version of myself in my head. I'll build the version of me that's already done the workout. So then I go in, and I'm like, and most times, like yesterday, I didn't even know what the workout was. Shane just put it up. So I'll go into the gym, and then no matter how hard it is, bit of my brain will go, you've already done this. And I'm not saying that that works all the time, because when I did the Ninja Warrior thing, I imagined the course and imagined myself fully completing it. And I had a ripped scapula at the time, so I really shouldn't have been doing anything too dramatic. So visually, every bit that was hard, I was like, you've already done this.
Mm.
But I still failed it. I hit the net and flipped into the water. So it's not going to just set you up perfectly, but it's giving you a better frame of mind to be stronger and more in tune with what you're doing.
That's nice,
really interesting, actually. When I was looking at your stuff, I think the main thing that I was thinking about was this sort of, you know, you said you checked the businesses and stuff, and then I seen you did anxiety and stuff. I think one of the biggest things I do, and it's the way I don't combat it, right? You mentioned there about the sleep.
Mm-hmm.
My big thing is, I don't know about the rest, everybody's different, so at night I struggle to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in terms of heads exploded, you know, startup business, you're always not worried, but you're stressing about things you probably shouldn't be stressing about.
Yeah.
But I'd be sitting maybe 12 o'clock at night trying to sleep, and I'd be thinking, oh, I need that sort of tomorrow. It's not life or death, but it's something that's in my head keeping me awake.
Mm.
And it could be about 10 different things. I keep going over all the different things that
yeah.
I shouldn't be worrying about, but I am. And I would listen to an audiobook or something. But I feel that's me just pushing that to the side.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't be doing that.
No.
Like, I would, like, one of the biggest things I value in the world for me, just as a person, is my sleep. Because
yeah.
I've just been, just sort of been affected by it for so long. Whenever, my sleep was bad when I was younger, but the stresses of business, I think in general, hit me just at night. During the day, I'm fine, quite a calm person, but then
he disagrees.
He's laughing. Do you think I'm really taking you wound?
Calm? What?
I'm quite a calm person. I've no worries during the day, but then at night time, there is that sort of anxiety sort of creeps in about the thoughts of future and that sort of stuff. What would you say is the best? I know you touched on it there, but what would you say is the best sort of protocol for me? Like, how would you ease me into making my sort of sleep better? And
One of the main things, because of the way you spoke, so whenever I work with people, I listen to the words that they use and the tone in which they use it, not just, because if you just said sleep, then initially when you say sleep, the first thing that comes into my head is, one, I used to be a macho sleeper, which was, and we all have done it, where I only slept for 4 hours, I can go in 4 hours, and I'm deadly.
When I value my sleep.
I'm a macho sleeper, and then I read a book, Why We Sleep, where he was on Joe Rogan as well, Matthew Walker.
I was told that one's life-changing, apparently.
Blew my mind.
Is that
like
the one? Yeah, I actually heard that one too. It's
I
very
haven't
interesting.
Watched that one yet.
8 hours is the
target. 8 hours, but even all the science and all behind it. So my sleep's terrible, and I teach people about sleep all the time, but I don't sleep a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt I could run on no sleep. Like, even yesterday, I joined Snapchat about 4 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
I joined it ages ago, but never used it. And then two or three days ago, I rejoined it, and I decided to do a Snapchat day yesterday.
I've seen that on your Facebook.
I ended up doing about 80 something snaps, and it wasn't me doing random stuff, it was just the stuff I was like, I'm going to do what I do. This is me getting up in the morning, this is me doing my mobility whilst I brush my teeth, this is blah blah blah. I started at 4 o'clock in the morning, or just about half three, before I did my meditation and stuff to switch off, and said I'm going to do this tomorrow. Then I was back up at, so I went to bed about 4:10, and I was back up at 9:15, and then I went to bed last night again at about 4:10 again.
So you did.
And I've been trying to fix it. It's going to take a bit of time to fix myself, but I like to be busy. So what I would say is first is goal setting for you would be a good one. Mm-hmm. Prioritizing what you need to get done during the day, because you said it. I've no worries during the day, which then means you probably procrastinate a bit. So you're mm-hmm. we're laughing. So
yeah, no, like everybody does.
Ah, everyone does.
Yeah.
So either be aware of your procrastination and allow it. Like I procrastinate. Mm-hmm. But I don't see it as a negative, because I'm like, mm-hmm. you can't just maintain. You have to go in and sing a song at your, like yesterday I was drumming songs at my sister and she was having to guess what the songs were. I could have been doing something more productive.
Yeah.
But to me, to someone that'll be procrastinating, to me it was a chill out before I go back to study and do what I'm doing. So having goals, I have goals every day that I want to achieve every day. I also have routine. I get up at any time. So I might go to bed at 4 and I might get up at 11, or I might get up at 8, I might get up at 7. It just depends on when I want to get up. But I will get up and then I will do 5 minutes of mobility. I will also every day meditate 3 times a day. And the last thing I do at night is a 5-minute meditation with 3 sets of 36 fire breathing. And then I do my relax process at the end of the night. And I sleep. I used to sleep like I'm dead with my arms across, like I'm a Dracula type guy. I lie on my back and I put my hands just below my belly button, which is the Qigong place for energy. So I lie there and I lie in that position and I wake up in that position.
Right.
Like I had a girlfriend who used to complain, she was a fidgeter in bed, she would move and roll and her arms would flap and hit me and roll about and leg all over me, and she used to get annoyed that I would never move. And I was the annoying one. And the reason I don't move, think about it in general, right? So say you're sitting like this, you're going to move at some point to get re-comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm a fidgeter.
Yeah.
So
your body's not comfortable. So if I go to sleep and I've relaxed my mind with the meditation, I relax my body with the relaxation process, my body doesn't need to find a comfortable position because it's comfortable in the position I put it in. And sleeping on your back is the best way to sleep. It's the most comfortable way to sleep. Once you get into it, and it's better for your body, for your organs, for everything. There's so many benefits of it. So my body doesn't need to find. So I sleep in that position, and I wake up in that position. I don't move at all. I have a massive, I don't know why I bought it, but I bought a queen bed. And if you were on it, lucky ducks. you could kneel across it, and you would just fall into my groove. Nothing else happens, it's just a groove where I am. So the first thing would be to set your goals. So then you can look at it and go, so you're sitting at night and 12 things come into your head you should have done. And you go, I should have done all them. Why did I not do them? Well, they weren't priorities, really, and I can just do them tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So again, you can logically talk to yourself. Then I would say if you can't sleep, most people toss and turn and get angry. So again, I talk about anchors a lot. So you're anchoring that. So every time then you go and get into bed, like a lot of people are thinking, I'll just watch one more Netflix. So what's the point? I'm not going to sleep when I go there anyway. So if you're not going to sleep, like if we decided to spar, if I was like, we're going to have a spar now, there's not a chance you're going to be able to punch me. I'm not letting it happen. When we go to start, party's going to be thinking, what's the point? I'm not going to even get, he's not going to let me near him, what's the point? So I'm already winning before we get anywhere. So when you go to sleep, you're already losing before you get there. So then you have your goal setting priorities. If you are in bed and things come into your head that are important, have a journal. I sleep with a journal right beside me, like my 12-year-old girl. And I write what I need to do to the next. So I'll be lying there and I'm like, oh God, you need that. Like the last meditation I released was called Love Yourself Meditation. So it's just me talking you through like a walkthrough meditation, which for starting meditating, it's one of the easiest ways to do meditating is to start with walkthroughs because you don't actually have to do anything. Then.
Yeah, it's that's what someone, I liked about the Headspace one.
Someone talking, you telling you someone what to do.
Yeah, now I think of this.
Yeah.
Breathe.
So that'll happen, and then the more you get better at meditating,
yeah,
the worse they are for you, because it'll go, so say you're lying and your eyes are closed and it'll say, and now you've entered a field and the tree's green. Your brain goes, I didn't have a tree. And then you have to build it, whereas whenever you first start out, you go enter the field, your brain sees the field, then they say there's a tree, a green tree, and then you go, oh cool, the green tree, you let your mind go with it.
Mm.
But you get better at visualizing, your mind will go to somewhere nice. Like if I visualize outdoor, I have a specific spot, no matter if I'm doing anything and people go, we're just going to visualize outdoor, I'll visualize it, they will talk about whatever they're talking about, the spot. So if I go to any meditation courses or anything, and they'll be like, and imagine this, and imagine the rocks, and imagine this, I'm already in my happy place,
mm-hmm.
which has a waterfall and a big massive tree and a rock that's got a flat edge that I can meditate on, and the lake in front of me. So they can say whatever they want, my brain is switched
their
that
rocks
off, and
can feck off.
They're not
your rocks.
Exactly, yeah. So the better you get at, so it's a good place to start. So write in the journal then if something comes up, and then you said you value sleep. Why do you value sleep?
I feel when I do get my 8 hours, a lot better in the mornings, but also, yeah, pretty much that. And I've always found during the day, I envy people that can go for naps during the day.
Teach naps.
I envy people that can do that.
Teach naps. That's brilliant. What a career.
There's people I've lived with in uni and stuff, that just head to the pillow, gone, take me about an hour, listen to them snoring sort of thing. Like I envy that, you know, that they can just do that.
With napping, I would always suggest to people, you do 20 minutes. A nap should be 20 minutes. Anything above that's a sleep. So a nap's 20 minutes because it keeps you in REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, and you wake up in it. So to practice, you go to bed or you go and lie on the sofa, you put on headphones, whatever, not listening to something so you can't hear the external world, and you set an alarm for 20 minutes. No matter what, you get up in 20 minutes. So you don't go, I haven't slept, this is shit, I'm going to get up now in 10 minutes. You stay there for 20. Your brain will eventually go, this dick's going to stay here for 20 minutes no matter what I do. Maybe I should just sleep. And you'll start to sleep. I was terrible at napping. Like, awful. Now I can nap wherever I want, and I can micro-nap as well, which is like a two-minute one, where you just fully switch off. So if I was doing something really hectic and then I have to go and deal with another client, I'll do a micro nap, which is about 2 minutes to switch me off so that I can go back to what I'm doing. So napping again is something that you have to train. Like, you look like you work out a bit. So if I said to you, very first day, I want you to deadlift 100 kilos, you'd be like, I couldn't deadlift 100 kilos. I'm like, but do you think if you practiced, you could deadlift 100 kilos? Aye. Whereas for some reason when it comes to sleep, people are like, no, I just can't. I just can't do it.
There's no
one between.
I haven't tried it.
Nah, it doesn't work. So you start to do that. Then if that... So then you've got your journal. You've got your goal setting priorities. You've got your journal. So if anything does come up new, like I might think of a man, I might hit the pillow and be like, right, I'm about to do my relax process. And because my brain is relaxed and fully alert, something that happened in the day might have been in there subconsciously as a magic trick routine. And then my brain will go, you have to write this down first. And then I'll write it all down and then I'll do the relaxed thing. So that's why it's the last thing I do. If that then doesn't work, change your environment. Change your bedroom a bit. Just move things. So like, say for goal setting, like you just have a whiteboard there with all the stuff on it. I would always tell people if they have it, one of them in their house, to move it every 2 weeks. Because every day you just come in and it's in the same place. Everything's in the same place. So you just get used to it. So you write all these goals and then eventually you go, I forgot about how I was supposed to do that. So you move it so it's always in your awareness. Every 2 weeks you move that, you come back and you go, oh, I forgot I was supposed to do that.
That's a good idea.
So if you can't sleep and you're lying in bed, get up. It's like you listen to an audiobook. Go and listen to an audiobook in a different room or in a chair in your room or somewhere else. Read a book, get up and do it somewhere else. Don't sit in your bed or lie in your bed reading or listen to the audiobook and hoping you'll fall asleep.
Yeah.
Like, I don't hope to go to sleep when I go to bed. I know when I go to bed, no matter what time it is, I'm going to bed to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That's because that's the way I'm planning on doing it. So them tips alone would help. Meditating helps too because it helps you control your mind, emotional control. Even that's why I asked you why you value your sleep. And your first response was, when I get. So you're going with, it's a negative response already.
Yes.
Why do you value sleep? Sleeping is amazing. It recovers the body. Your body relaxes. Like in that book, Matthew's talking about how you... When you're awake, you're dying. Like that's what awake is dying. Like your brain cells are... So the longer you stay awake, the more you're dying.
Yeah.
So now when I go to sleep now, I'm like, not only... Like I sleep, all the other reasons I had for sleep, now I'm saving my own life. Like, I'm deadly at this. So I think they would be the best structure to sleep, and then again remembering why you want to sleep.
That sounds good. I can definitely put that into action.
That's cool. You knew the way you were talking about the micro naps there for a second. Do you ever? There was a podcast. Courtney Dillwater was in Joe Rogan podcast. She's like,
we
this,
love Joe Rogan.
I'm sorry. Like,
sponsored by Joe Rogan.
Yeah, mad
no,
fan.
Don't give him any more money. He's famous.
No, he's sponsoring this one.
Yeah, he is. Hopefully. Shout out. No, but she's a long distance, an ultra runner, and she did this race, Moab 240. I think it's 230 something mile race, and she was running for like 2 days and no sleep, and then she took a. They said 30 seconds, or was it, I think it was 30
it was
seconds, 30 give me
second,
a 30 seconds nap, and then she said she was so much more awake after, and she was ready to rock, and she had so much more energy. So is that like the positive effects of micro-napping, or do you think
that's
what caused that? Or
yeah, some of it is going to be placebo. You're going to be running a little adrenaline and stuff, but like I work with a guy, Shane Mullen, he does some crazy endurance running. The first time we started working together, he was doing the ice, fire and ice race in... Iceland. We run for 250 kilometers through Iceland, and we did I taught him micro naps and how to sleep better at night. So because he had to sleep in a tent, he had to carry everything, be self-sufficient. Like even one of the things we did was he was complaining at the start that he had to carry his food and all his gear and everything that exists.
Wow.
And I was like, that's going to be hectic, isn't it? And he was like, oh, it's going to be so heavy. I go, I day one, first hour, going to be heavy, then you're going to eat. Where are you getting your food from?
Yeah. So
my bag.
So I'm going to get
so
later.
So bags later. Perfect, no. So every time he was eating, so not only was it fueling the body, it's fueling the mind too. The mind's going later.
Get
later,
this down me.
So he's then running and doing that. And then when I taught him how to do it, I taught him to do it in a sumo squat because I didn't want him doing the micro sleeping, lying down or chilled out. And anyway, I want him to do it. So he's limber, so he does it in what's called a sumo squat, which is the everyone knows what a sumo squat pretty much is. You just can do a picture of it later and tag everyone. So he's recouping the body physically as well as mentally. So whenever he does that, it's adding to what he's doing. So instead of him thinking to himself, right, I'm going to micro sleep and it's going to help me cognitively, he's thinking, I'm going to do that and I'm going to do it in a sumo squat. So I'm opening my hips, knees and ankles and joints. So the next time I start running, 2 minutes later, my body's better prepared for that amount of running.
Yeah, definitely.
So it keeps. So he kept doing that. And
what was this guy's name?
Shane Mullen. He's the one that me and him do random challenges. Recently, wait, you ever see David Goggins?
Yeah.
Joe Rogan podcast.
I love that man.
I followed him for years. Before the Joe Rogan, like his stuff is.
He is an animal.
He did a tire flip for a mile. And I rang Shane and I was like, Shane, tire flip for a mile.
Yes.
A mile.
What size of tire was it?
Big. I don't do really endurance stuff. I go and play in the gym. So we did a tire flip for a mile. Quarter of a mile in, the both of us were like, if we only did a kilometre, hey, this would be.
Did I?
but what I do a lot of social media work. I know you used to do a lot of social media stuff as well. So when we start, I'll go live. And I'll like, going live. Doing a challenge. What are we doing? We're going to try to flip a tire for a mile.
Oh, right. So you've shouted out to people.
I constantly be going, and I'm like, here, we're here. It was brutal. You couldn't get onto the tire, so it was fingertip lifts. I went resting the night after. So we did that. It took Shane 59 minutes or something to do it.
Is the tire on concrete or is
it
on
grass? No, it's on a road. We're up and down the road. Like we do the same road all the time. And it ended to be challenging. So he did. He did it 59, took me 72. And we're pretty much at the same tire. I weigh about 10 and a half stone, and he weighs, I'm going to be polite and say, like about 16. He doesn't, like, he does ultra stuff, but he doesn't look like an ultra run. When we go to
really?
Stuff,
ultra?
When we go to ultra run things, and I'm his support, like the last support I did for him.
They'll think you're the runner.
I
you look like
me,
an ultra runner.
They're like, you're pretty slim, you look like you're doing this, and I'm like, no, it's a beefcake over there. He did a 24-hour run in Belfast. We just did a little...
Yeah,
we actually guessed on last week.
He did it.
The same one.
I know, the Energizer.
Aye.
No, 81? He did 80-something miles.
I don't want to put him out. I
he was aiming for the 100 and...
Aye.
got 80 something. He said he wasn't happy about it, but
they never are.
Is all right.
They never are. You chat to any of them, you're like, how many did you do? 7 million.
But they're always chasing.
Happy?
They're always chasing always better, like, aren't they? Everybody is.
I'm doing my first last man standing race in February. So
Where is it? Is it in Florence Court or is it?
That's the one in September, I think. Yeah.
That's one of the first things I ever worked with Shane in, was the last one standing. We did it in Winterfell. What's it called? Castle Whelan or something.
That's where mine is. Yeah.
We did it there, and at about 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd been with them about 18 hours at this stage. About 4 o'clock in the
good
morning, friend. It was just me, a wee old man, and the two organisers. But I tell the story. I tell it in my book as well. Shane came in. My job was to motivate him to get. He wanted to do 13 hours, and came in about 10 hours, like a bad child. He was bored. He got bored like doing it. So
I think that'll happen. I'm thinking podcasts.
That's what we learned then, to get him music and stuff. We never had any of that. So just running.
Uh-huh.
And it's, see, at night time when you're just running with a light, and
that'd
all you
hard.
Can see is your feet.
That would be hard.
So he came in and strappily sits on the floor, takes his shoes off and throws them. They're not going back out. And I had been chatting to the organizer. I knew he was starting to dwindle a wee bit, and I chatted to the organizer. I was like, what? I know nothing about running on stage. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, oh, they're very nearly at 100k. And I was like, oh, and people will drop out there, won't they? And he was like, oh, probably. So I went to Shane, and I was like, hey, people, 100k, I heard a load of ones are dropping out at 100k. You just have to do one more, and you'll go way up the ranks. So every hour he came in, I had another random excuse.
For the ball game.
And he said, like, we were chatting about it one day then, and he was saying, I was going around that thing, thinking, the fuck's he going to tell me this time? He's going to make me go back out there. But how are we going to end that? Courtney,
she's an old timer.
So I think if you can do that, you can switch off between, just in general, like whenever you're doing work on the computer and then you go to work with clients, you're able to do that. Like if I work with, I might have two clients in a row. One could be full, like, suicidal, anxious, depressive, and the next one could be an MMA fighter prepping for a fight.
Yeah.
I can't be the same.
No, you can't
tone
be the same.
No.
Speaking for both of them, I have
just
to, like,
same also clients, definitely.
Yeah, whenever you get the ones like that are all into cool stuff, like say, or you get the real professionals.
Yeah.
And you have to be like, yeah, it's jolly good. Mm, yeah. Mm.
Shirt and tie, yeah.
Mm, yeah. Doing it in Skype. Boxers, shirt and tie.
Yes.
I think everyone can learn it. This is why I went with the prove it guy thing. Because people used to think I was special. Oh, but you can do that, and you can do this, and you do this. I'm like, but I trained that. I could teach you how to do it. Everything I do can be taught.
Yeah.
And so if people hire me, I'll teach them whatever they want to learn. Unless they're a magician. Like, I teach two magicians, but it's a specialized course. I won't.
Divulge the secrets.
Again, just because when we go back, like, it's just boring for people then. Like, they sort of lose them. But I've done that, and then I've done a lot of working behind the scenes for TV magic TV shows and stuff like that. So
that's
I don't
cool.
mind teaching that if it's for that purpose.
Yeah.
Yes.
But everything I do can be taught. So it's nothing. The only special thing about me is that I'm willing to fail repeatedly. Like, we did the tire flip. That worked. We then decided to
wouldn't
push
the pull-up challenge ago.
No.
What was his? What's the
it's ridiculous.
Like 24 hours? How many you can do in 24 hours?
No,
and it was like,
I'm having enough to do half an hour.
What we rest in between
rest?
But we did a sled push our body weight for a mile, and my body just gave up. Like, I did the same thing live, going to do try this, see what it's like. I went live. I was like so close to passing out. I was live, and I was like, I'm going to pass out during this live. Shane was kept going, and I tried a couple times to get back in it, and every time I bent over, I just everything went black. So I stayed, like, I was looking really coherent talking to Shane when he was doing his next, like, run of it. I was like, I know, well, I've been great. And then when he'd go, I'd just turn around and sit and, like, oh God, I've got about 20 seconds before he has to turn around again. And he'd turn around, and I'd be like, yes, keep going, yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And he did, we were supposed to do 90, he did 100, and the last one I jumped on it. And did the live
of him doing it,
of him do pushing 100 kilo plus my 67 kilo. And I was like, look at him go. And he could have just kept. I told him to stop. I was like, you have to stop. We had a goal. You did it. Stop. because he'll keep going. When we did a Belfast, what we did, I drove and he ran Dublin to Belfast.
I want to do that race. So want to do that race.
Brutal.
It's 106 miles or something like that.
We did it. There was one part in the race because you're all chipped and you can follow.
Yeah,
follow
you can follow the people.
He took his coat off and threw it in the back of my car, and I'd been driving beside him at 2 mile an hour for ages. So I was like, "Look, I need to warm the car up or something." Like, I just wanted to get away. I was bored.
Open her up.
So I was like, "I'm going to drive up a couple of miles and come back. I'll meet you in 2 miles." So I'm just going to drive a wee bit for myself and come back. I'll meet you in 2 miles. So he takes his coat and stuff off and leaves it in the car. I go flat. Like flat up this road. I had just bought my new car. It was only like 4 day old. It's a wee Golf. Flat. Park up. Go on the app. Wonder where he is. Fuck, he's beside me. How did he get beside me? And then I realised. So I went back down the road and I was like, I put your coat. I had to go back to the organisers and I was like, oh, here I'm Shane Mullins, driver guy. Whatever support I think it was, and they were like, I've been wondering what happened there. And I was like, I took his coke and I went, they were like, how fast did you go? And I was like, look, very fast. And like, I haven't seen you come back. But he, at 2 o'clock in the morning, so it started at 12 outside Guinness. Mm-hmm. 2 o'clock in the morning, he kicked the cat's eye. You couldn't see, it was dark. Like, we were in the middle at those stages. We were in the middle of nowhere. I had these lights, big massive lights we had bought, and I was pretending I was a Jedi, and the one of the girls that had joined us at one point was like, I don't know how you have so much energy. Like, I'm bored, I need to keep myself like entertained. And he came over the mountain, he was like, I'm so glad you're a bit mental. I was like, why? He goes, every time we went over a hill we could see
this light.
And he was like, so every time we went over the hill we were like, we're getting closer, and if you didn't have them lights on we wouldn't know where we were going and it would just be a nightmare. But he kicked the cat's eye and tore his hip flexor about 2 in the morning, and then ran at 8 in the morning. Shit. Before he had slowed way down. He was doing a mile was taking about 20 minutes at this stage. Like, he was locked, completely wrecked. And I just had a conversation. I said to him, look, I will stay. It's going to take you another 8 hours to finish this if you want to do it. You've been running since 12 o'clock yesterday. You buckled yourself about 6 hours ago. I said, I'll stay with you, I do not mind. But if you think it's going to, like I said, you've got a career to think of. You need, like, that's what people need to know when they do challenges. A challenge is a challenge. You can't feel a challenge. Mm-hmm. You're allowed.
Yeah.
And if you never feel any challenge you ever set, then it's not good enough.
No. Mm-hmm. You'll be happy with an 8th place, like.
Aye.
Well, was it your friends obviously heard of the Barclay Marathon then?
Aye. I would love to convince them to do that.
Oh my god.
It'd be deadly.
It's
Barclay
so good.
Is in the States, is it?
It's the hardest marathon ever, and it's not a marathon, it's more, it's combined, it's like a 100 miles, but it's all like terrain. It's very hard to explain. Basically, what you have to do is you're in a forest. Basically, you're in a forest that's like full of thorns, and like apparently you people come back and they're all caught up and everything, and you have to go find these. You're given a number, mm-hmm. like you're doing with most marathons, but you have to go around and find these books that this madman has hit all around this forest, and you have to collect the number that's on your jersey or on your t-shirt of the book, mm-hmm. and then you go get, and it's a scavatron pretty much. You go get all the numbers from the books, the page number of the book, from all the books, come back, and then you have to go do that. Is it 6 times? 5 or 6 times? I can't mind. But yeah, I've watched a couple of documentaries on it, and it looks like,
you can imagine boys fighting each other at the book, just like, get the
fuck out. No, apparently it's
a book.
It's just insane.
Some of them stuff are mad. Like, some of the road, like, we've worked with Shane, and I've seen people get annoyed at him, because one of the main things we did when we were doing Iceland, when I was like, look, it's 250 kilometers, but you're going to be somewhere not many people, because they're running through, like, he was sending me video clips of running over old dried up like lava rock and stuff. Mm. And I was like, you're somewhere, like, not many people get to go.
Yeah.
Like, look at it.
Enjoy that.
Enjoy
yeah.
it.
Enjoy
I was
that.
Like, it's not about winning. We're not here to win. We're about experiencing it and just getting through it. And he was ringing me at night going, these boys are, like, a couple of them are getting a bit annoyed. There was one boy that, like, ran past Shane. And she was standing taking photos. So I turned to loads of photos off my head. He's taking photos. And then he passes the guy. And the guy runs past. And Shane's taking photos. Like, seriously, he must have done it about 8 times before the garage, and like, I fucking hate you. Every I sprint past you. And he did it in another, like, he recently won an ultra about a week or two ago. He was doing the same thing. He was like, oh, stop and took a couple photos for you, you know, it was great. And I was like, and then he won. Did anybody pass you? And he was like, aye. They did a bit, but then he's got a thing, he just loves running the rain. So one, like, he was running well and he was just ahead of them a wee bit, and then he was stopping for photos and just keeping up. He never thought about trying to win it or anything. Then the rain hit, and he said, the next thing, I was finished.
Nah.
Rain, he just went in the zone. He was thinking, I'm just done. That's but he hasn't failed any of our challenges yet. The last one we did was dragging tires a mile, which we thought was easy because the first maybe 20 yards must have been different
terrain
because it was like just sliding lovely, and then all of a sudden the whole way up, the two of us like completely buckled. I ran a quarter, I don't run, like ran a quarter of a mile dragging tires behind me.
He sounds like an animal, like.
He isn't, aye, but even
fair play to him.
Even just I think anyone that does running, if you should do it the way he did. Like, he outsourced his breathing training and his mental training. He didn't just go, like a lot of people go, run to clear my head.
Oh shit, if I went to run, I would wreck my head. Like, I'd be overthinking.
I'd be thinking about how far away from my destination I'm actually going.
Oh, certainly.
I'd be like, I'm running over here, and I want to be where I started. That makes no sense to me at all.
Sport is all about the mind as well. Like,
depends what you love. Like, I could bear crawl for days, and people hate bear crawling.
I
love it. So it just depends. Again, it's the same as anything. It depends what you're into. But I make Ronacan is really good.
Yeah, that's how we get to that.
Tomorrow.
Oh, some good wee tidbits in there.
No, it's awesome. Great. It's easy. It's easy to talk to you because there is a lot of areas to cover. You've done a lot. A
lot of interest.
Thank you.
Most certainly.
What about the? So these businesses you help. How did you come up with your that sort of business, like your website and all that there? How did you get into that line of work, or is that just something that fell on your lap? Or
it came from performing as a magician. Mm-hmm. So I would perform, and then I would think, right, I want these people to hire me again. So I started looking into who runs companies, and the people that run companies are the owners, the CEO, and more importantly than anyone is the HR. If you keep HR right, they keep everybody else right.
Mm.
And they're the ones that communicate with everyone.
Mm.
So I would do magic based on the company. So like, I teach interview skills, and one of the things I hate about teaching interview skills is people go, oh, I don't know my strengths and weaknesses, I'm terrible at it. And I'm like, but you know it's probably going to come up, so just, that's one area you could actually be prepped for. It's the only area you could be prepped for is who you are and your wee elevator pitch, and then what you're good at and what you're not good at. Like, why people don't have that is just, to me, it's just laziness. So I would look at the company, and each company has an ethos. So the company's ethos might be, like mine's is limitations and mirage. You can do and be whatever it is in life you want. So if I was dealing with my company, I would go in and I would say, right, do a bit of magic, and then I'll go, right, I'll do one more. So I'll find the HR, or I'll find the owner, or someone really important in the business that could rehire me. And I'll say, I've been working on this thing. It's really, to me, it really feels like it's my ethos. It just gets my magic across. And my whole thing is limitations and mirage. So whatever the company's thing is, so if the company's thing is they want to be the best and the fastest, and they want you to achieve great outcomes the fastest way possible, I'll say, I've come up with this routine. Normally I do nice, relaxed, slow tricks, but I did this routine. I love to just try to hit people fast, the best possible outcome, the fastest way. So somewhere in their head, they're thinking, God, that's like us.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do a routine based on that. So I cater a lot to what they're doing. So then people just started to ask me, how'd you get into this? And I used to perform as a martial artist. We'd go to schools and teach and things like that. So I was used to speaking in front of people. I performed on stage as a magician as well. I started to make all my magic about improving your life. So it's not just pick a card, there's your card, hooray, and then I move on. Unless I'm doing a carnival. Sometimes when you do carnivals, you just have to be like Spitfire,
just
doing it. But I try to make it impact, mean something. So then they asked me, would I come in and do after dinner talks? Just perform, do we talk? So I would do a performance, and they would come after and go, God, your performance wasn't like a normal magic show. It was kind of like motivational and magical, and people now think, like, instead of you using a PowerPoint, you used magic to get your points across. So if I teach body language, I could stick a PowerPoint up and go, these are the things you need to know about body language, blah, 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 blah. Or I could get you to pick a card. Don't show it to anyone. look at it, so remember it, and then I ask you questions and teach everyone in the room how I'm getting the yes no answer from you by the way you're standing, by the way you're moving. So it's more interactive, more entertaining, but it gets the same point across.
Yes.
So then they started hiring me, so that's how I got into that. And then I met a magician called Ian Rowland, so he's a writer, a magician, and he's worked with FBI teaching them about cold reading and stuff like that. So everybody was demonstrating magic to him, so I broke a chopstick because I wanted to befriend him. So I was like, I'll break a chopstick, I will make him my friend. And we got talking about what I do, and he's the guy that helped me with the book. He said, your life's very interesting, you should write a book on your teachings. So we ended up writing the book. And as I was doing that, he helped me just break into the corporate market, to get away from being a corporate magician to being a corporate speaker. The TED Talk really helped, because when you send someone, have you done anything before? I've done a TED Talk. One, they're already thinking, God, he's done a TED Talk, that's really good. And then I break a chat, I immediately like suck them in immediately with what I do. So that's how I got into that. And then just from when I practiced body language, I looked for the top person in the field to teach me. And the guy I found was called Ben Cardam. He's the deductionist, so he's like a Sherlockian. He's
just about to say that. The stuff you're saying reminds me of Sherlock. And you look at someone that's like, Virgo, right now, you have this.
even when you were doing like the chess thing, I was like, get out of my head. I don't know what it is about that, but it just kind of...
It freaks people out.
It freaks me out a bit. It's like... I don't want to not be in control. I don't know. Maybe it says a lot about me.
It's the same with everyone. Like you earlier said that when you're talking about anxiety and stuff, you're like, everyone's different. My whole take is everyone's the same. Like I work with fighters that are terrified. I work with fighters that are afraid of spiders. I work with like business people that hire me. Like I work in a company. My goal with the company is to get them obviously to rehire me, but I like to get people in charge to hire me as a one-to-one. And I've had some just hire me for anxiety. One person hired me because he wanted to be better at speaking on the phone to people. I did that. That's why I speak clearer than a lot of people from OMA. Like, I'm not coming on and talking like Mark. Mark.
That seems to work for him for his comedy, though.
It's deadly.
I seen him on Saturday. He did.
When he goes on stage, you just get sucked in.
You do.
It's like he's your granddad.
The guy down the road that's telling me yarn.
He's got a trustworthy like air about him.
You really want to hear what he has to say, and you're like, I will listen to it. No matter what you're talking about, I will listen to it. But I went to a vocal coach. I hired a vocal coach to make sure I could speak clear and with tonality and how to work a stage and things like that. So some people hire me just to do that, to improve their speaking, to improve speeches. I'll be hired to teach people how to memorize their bullet points. So if I go on stage, you'll never see me on stage with a script or notes anywhere. I will have bullet points and I will memorize the bullet point and I will know where I'm going. Every routine is different. When I first tried to memorize, like even that TED Talk, the routine had to change from what I'd memorized because the girl didn't quite understand what I was asking her to do, because she didn't understand what cards were or what was going on.
Yes.
So there's no point memorizing a trick. In my head, I don't, because I'm better at ad-libbing and I just don't like the constraints of that. So whenever I work with a company, I try to, like, my whole selling for companies is I will teach you how to relax and get emotional control. How I see it, like, every company wants to save money. They pay me to come in, but they want to know they're going to earn that money back from the information I give them.
Yes.
And more. So I teach them that I will guarantee less sick days that year because the people that work for them know how to relax.
It's very valuable as well. Like,
that's massive. Like the money the companies lose in sick days is massive. And to be fair, like a lot, like I don't know the real statistic, but I'm going to say from what I've learned myself personally, about 85% of the sick people off from companies don't want to be at home anxious. They want to be at work, earning the money and doing stuff. They don't want, like, some people obviously are just going to do it because that's the type of person they are, but most of them want to be back. So if you can teach them how to get rid of their anxiety or how to improve their life, then they're going to be, they're going to go back, which is going to save the company money and
make everyone happy.
So that is my main goal. And how to, I do team building, and even my team building, the last team building I did, the guys told me that the groups just didn't interact at all. So I just used hypnosis. I hypnotized a girl and shook her hand, made her forget her name, all this stuff, and then made her think she was part of the other team. And she sat with the other team and they all interacted, and I was like, you tell her, she thinks she's part of the team, and all I've told her is that anything you tell her she does in the team, she'll explain why she does it. So they're going, you always do all the accounts, why is that? And she'll explain in a real elaborate, random manner why she does accounts. So then I unhypnotize her and say, you want to go back to where you're supposed to be? And she sits back, and then I say to that team, what was it like having that person in there? Oh, it was good cracking. Oh, why? She did this, this, and this, and like that. Is that any different from when they come in normally? Some bit of crack, you're just going to interact. Like, you never know what you'll get by just talking to people.
Breaking down wee barriers there as well. Like,
without doing it the PowerPoint way of,
yeah,
what do you see? This person has green eyes and this one has blue. Where are they different? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm...
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like, definitely is. Oh, there was one other thing I was going to ask you. You mentioned their body language.
Mm-hmm.
As you said that, I was getting really conscious of my body language. But do you ever get annoyed with that knowledge? You know, like, you're sitting in a big audience, like the TED Talk, or I'm sitting here, and you maybe see me glancing away somewhere, oh, he's not interested in me, he's not interested in what I'm talking about. Do you ever get annoyed in social situations because you have the knowledge of that?
No, but it's done me more good than bad.
Mm.
The only time it's ever worked against me is when I stupidly tell women I'm chatting to, like if we're out
that you can do
on
that.
A date, that I can do it.
That would probably scare them a bit.
Not at the start. At the start, they go, oh, read me, I'd love you to read me, read me, read me, and I say no, and then eventually I go, you know what, right, go, why do you want me to read, well, what do you know about me, and I'll say something,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll go, I can't believe you said that. I did end it immediately once, because I read her, and she just was like, drive me home.
He just says, oh, well, I'm seeing here you like taxis. maybe you can get a taxi.
I love walking. but even before I trained under Ben, I think everyone should look up Ben. His, like, at the minute, he's now practicing to enter the Memory World Championships.
Wow.
And I was chatting to him last night. He's doing, I think it's like 8.5 minutes or less. He's memorizing 300 numbers, 300 number combination. That's why I, like you were saying, I do a lot of interesting stuff. I'm very good at a lot of things, because rather than spend 3 weeks studying a project and trying to learn how to memory skill, I find whoever's the top in the field and study under them. I just be like, right, what do I have to do to get to study under you? So Craig Galvin is one of my hypnotherapist mentors. I just contacted him and was like, you like exercise? I love exercise. Also hypnotherapy, do you want to be my mentor?
Chat sometime.
So all of them, me and Ian meet up once a week on Skype and chat. So I have about 7 different mentors. I think everyone should have mentors in what they
do.
And
fantastic.
So whenever you're out, if I'm on stage, for example, I have to use it. It's my bread and butter. You have to, like, I'll do a Z scan of the stage or the crowd, and I'll read the audience. So then I can change. Like, I might say to you, You come to my show, right? I'm going to do this, this, and this. Here's everything I've planned. And I want you to tick it off as I do it. And halfway through, you'll get to a point where you're like, where is he? And then I'll come to you and you'll go, sorry, I got confused here. It'll seem so scripted and fluent, what I'm doing, that you'll think you're in the wrong. And I'll go, nah, they were not getting it. So I just changed my plan. I trained control and restraint to door staff for years. So I'm very, and because of the fighting background, I was always very good at picking out fights, and I'd be able to point to people like, that's going to happen there, you know, just interrupt this. And I've done it a couple of times. I remember doing it in a pub in London. Me and my cousin were chatting to these two girls, and we're standing in front of a table full of drinks, and I called over one of the door staff, and I was like, here, go and do me a favor, go and go over and separate them two boys, just separate them, don't do anything. And he basically told me to shut up, let him do his job, and I was like, I'm trying to help you with your job. That is going to be a fight. Like, settle down. And told me to shut up again. And I'm like, fair enough. So me and my cousin were chatting. But the fight was far enough away from us that I thought it'd be fine. But the fight bowled over very quickly to us. And I grabbed the two girls and put my foot on my cousin's chest and, like, kicked them away and turned the girls. And the two boys went over the table. The two girls that were with us started to cry. Because they were like, we nearly died, and my cousin was standing with a footprint on his chest going,
what'd you get me?
Like, who are you? And stuff like that, it's never, apart from obviously telling females that I can do it, it's never hindered my life more than it's helps, and it's
nothing wrong with too much knowledge.
As long as you're smart about it. But then, like say in this environment, I don't need to read your body language unless you're asking me a question or I'm asking you a question. Like whenever I asked you about all that stuff, I'm reading everything because I need to know where to go.
Yeah.
When I asked you about sleep, you'll notice like I'm talking and I'm peering to both of you. But when I asked you a specific question, I shift. My whole body shifts. I want to take on everything. I want to see what your feet are doing, what your knees, your hands, everything. But the first thing we did when we meet, I do it as well. As soon as we meet and we shake hands, I get a baseline for everybody. When we shake hands, couldn't get his baseline because he's hiding behind everything. Mm-hmm. And I just came in and sat back down. But what that told me was he's going to be over there doing whatever he's doing.
Doing his thing.
So I don't need to be too aware of him until you two started gesturing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that is important. If I wasn't alert and switched on, that would have been very distracting.
Yeah.
And I would be like, why is he? And I would be thinking, I have no idea how long we've been talking. This is like Vegas. There's no clocks. You mentioned half an hour at one point. So I would be like, I have no idea.
I don't know how long.
Oh, no, it's an hour and a half.
Flies into this.
All that. So when you're gesturing, I could have started thinking, oh, maybe I'm talking too much.
Mm-hmm.
But you're in charge, so I can't go. So if he's anything to ask me to round this up, but I realised because of a hand position, I was talking to you at the time when this was happening, out of my peripheral, you made a hand position and pointed. So I know you were saying to him, get the camera and go over there and take a
mm-hmm.
photograph.
You're giving it all away to our five audience.
So being aware, and you can hire Ben. Like you can, that's what I did. I hired Ben.
What's his full name? Just to plug
Ben Carnell, the deductionist. So I'll send you a link.
That sounds really interesting. Like anything we chat about here, we're going to link it all. Anyway.
Cool. But he's got a book as well. Remember, I wrote a book. He's got a book as well that he wrote. It's not in Limitationism Rise where you can get my book. You can get his book at
buy both now. Buy both now. Subliminal.
But he does like we do tattoo work and everything. So you can go in like. It blows people's minds when you're chatting to them and you look at their tattoo and you're able to say, oh, I see you got that and it means this, and it's the rest of the position of the body and what it looks like, stuff like that. That's why I was so interested in yours earlier, because
mm-hmm.
I would not have been able to tell that. I would have got that wrong, because it's such clean work. It
he's doing well.
But what you answered by telling me wrong would have given me all the rest of the information that I would have been able to go on.
Yeah.
So... like relationships and stuff like that, if you're trying to get into one and know one, that sort of stuff is very helpful, because then you can communicate better in a relationship. I think it's why a lot of relationships don't work, is the communication on one or both sides is terrible.
Yeah.
But also it's just great crack to go up to someone and say something about them that you're not supposed to know.
Yeah.
Like, that freaks people out. And because I work a lot with body, I can tell when people walk where they're injured, where they're sore, if they've ever damaged anything.
Oh, I'm sore right now. Where am I?
See, it depends now, because you're relaxing position. But the way you hold an arm, you would imagine at some point you damage the shoulder.
My mobility, shoulder mobility.
Your shoulder mobility was terrible when you went to stretch. I know.
It's like a wee T-Rex. It's a shame trying to make coffee. He's just
so
a wee
bad.
T-Rex.
It's so bad. I need to work on that.
No,
my knees.
But you could just guess that as a runner. So
exactly.
You run,
yeah.
And I would go, you probably have quite bad knees,
yeah.
What sort of shoes do you run in? you could when you're deducing something, you don't have to be spot on.
No.
And most people love giving away information. I could have just easily said to you, I'm very good at picking up on injuries. Like, I know for a fact about your injury.
Mm-hmm.
I just gesture. And you'll go.
I would have automatically.
You'll look at it, or you'll react, or you'll hold yourself, or something will happen. I just picked shoulders because you were holding. I said it was the position you're holding, but also because when you went to raise your arms to stretch, not really happened. But and I think that's something that runners miss out on. Runners run with their legs. You're meant to run with your body.
Oh yeah,
your body's
yeah.
supposed to be able to move.
Well, I also climb, but.
Well, then you should have more shoulders.
Have,
how are you
yeah.
going to do the Mission Impossible 2?
We were talking about that.
That was brilliant. He does that.
He does it in the new Mission Impossible. I watched the new Mission Impossible.
Is
and he does
yeah,
it.
It's very good.
It's basically exactly the same scene. He's
is
like
it?
Climbing a rock and all, and there's like real dramatic. And I can't remember, because I was thinking the whole time, do the happy, do the glance.
do the glance.
I think people can barely do that in general. There's some more arms out.
You were saying, Fergal, there's literally no advantage to him doing that whatsoever from
the
your
view.
Experience.
Apart from the view,
yeah.
You can go like that.
You can
erect it. Exactly. That's
very
what
good.
I do.
You look like you get caught in the shower.
No, fantastic. I think we'll wrap it up there. Jeez, we chatted enough. And I have to dictate this whole thing as well. So.
Oh, I hear it.
I look forward to dictating it.
I think
go through it and you find out some wee nuggets in there. I find that last podcast we did was really good. I sent it into a big business group that I'm in, like 3,000 people in it. I'm going to throw this one in too because all your stuff's very business oriented.
Cool.
And a lot of business people in it. I think you'd find a lot of.
Which business group is it?
Called Bismarck.
I am part of them.
You know?
Aye.
You're going to get a shout out probably Monday, I would say. They're going to find a lot of useful information in there. And fascinating. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure to meet you.